You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Friday, not Thursday, but it's time for the Doubleheader Dream Team edition of the 5 o'clock shadow, but it's not the 5 o'clock shadow. You get what I mean. Viv Govender from Rand Swiss, the award-winning Rand Swiss, is with us, along with, of course, David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. And by the way, if you want to get into the Sasfin Securities David Shapiro Crystal Challenge, is this your last day to do it, David? Last business day?
Yeah.
It is the last day to do it, isn't it? What do we do? How do we do it?
There's just go onto the site. There is a link. It's pretty easy. And, you know, even if you miss it or something happens, we always open up, and we don't want entrance next week, you know, but we're always open-minded. You know, we're not that strict. So try and get onto the website and, you know, look, even on the weekend you can do it. I mean, that's fine.
Okay, I'm going to do it. I'm doing it this afternoon.
It's a challenge. You must do it, yeah, because it's a bit of a challenge. I mean, when you think that everybody says, oh, it's just choose five stocks, you say, okay, you've got 10 months. Where are you now? And I know, Viv, we're all going to talk about gold and platinum and everything, and you're saying, okay, where's this world, crazy world, as you said when we introduced the show, when we started on the conversation. So where are we going to be 10 months time? It's not that easy.
It's not easy at all. And Viv, unfortunately, you're barred from joining because you're far too clever.
No, we don't bar anybody. No. He can even come in his daughter's name, his wife's name. We're pretty open about it.
Anyway, Viv, for your edification, David and I spoke on Monday, and I said, I was talking about the much maligned days of when markets opened and then they closed and then they opened the next day. And so what would happen was that there would be a graph. It would close at 8, 9 o'clock at night, Central European time or South African time, and then it would open the next day. And therefore, it would sometimes open higher or lower than the close the previous day. So there would be a gap on the chart. And I was looking at the gold price, and I saw it gapping every day. Every time I went to bed at 12:30 or whatever, having watched a football match, I would see the gold price $100 higher than I remembered when it closed in New York at 10 o'clock or something like that. And there was this theory, Viv, of three gaps: the breakaway gap, the runaway gap, and the exhaustion gap. The third gap being the exhaustion gap, which is people either covering shorts or getting in. They were Johnny Come Latelys. And I saw that this week. And on Wednesday night, on a podcast with Skulk Lowe, who's a fine chap. David's on television with him every Wednesday, I think it is, in the afternoon. And I said, this is the top of the gold market. And he said, you cannot call the top of anything because you'll be criticised and ridiculed for calling that top. But I called the top in gold. And look what's happened to it now. Viv, can we start for a change with you with gold? Is it telling us something that it's gone from 5,625 on Wednesday night, Thursday morning, to where it is now, pushing to go down back through 5,000, Viv?
In terms of like the gold price, I think it went a bit ballistic. I mean, I was looking at the silver price a couple of days ago. Also went to like $120 an ounce. You know what I mean? And I think that was a bit of a overdone move. It felt like a frenzy. It felt like, you know, people were just kind of capitulating, and maybe shorts were closing, or people were just kind of like afraid of missing out on the rise or whatever it was.
Yes.
And so we did a trade out, which was the gold silver ratio. And at that time it was below 45, the gold silver ratio. It's moved, you know, well in our favor, but not as much as if we had been going short of gold or silver, of course. But we were looking at that. I'm thinking that was a bit off. Now, in terms of the gold price, is this the end of it? I don't think so, because this year alone, you were talking about it, you know, with the Federal Reserve, et cetera, being in play. The U.S. government is going to do things to the dollar over the next couple of years that are probably not going to be great for the dollar. It's also going to mean that what Trump is also doing in international relations is going to mean that, you know, central banks don't want to be involved in dollars as much. And quite frankly, there is not that much gold in the world compared to the amount of dollars out there. And if you wanted to replace the U.S. dollar with gold as your reserve currency, the gold price would need to be significantly higher than here, you know, for that to occur. And I think that is what's probably the longer-term trend happening out there. At the same time, you know, we also have, and I've talked about this in the past, places like India, I don't know how much in China, but India definitely has incredible amounts of gold. We're talking private citizens in India have, like, I think, multiple times as much gold as the U.S. government does. And as that country grows 7%, 8% a year, that gold is going to be, more and more gold is going to be consumed because it's a cultural item that people want to buy a lot of, you know what I mean? And so that's also going to be a driver into the future. So the overall gold price, I think, is still, you know, got a way to go eventually. But in the short term, I just think this rally would be just too strong.
I'll qualify my call on the gold price peaking on Wednesday. And that was a near-term view. I think it comes back to 4,000, 3,900, something like that, but then potentially goes sideways and goes again. So, yes, fundamentally very good, technically horrendous looking. David, big tech results came out this week, and I'm going to start with you and then move on to Viv. I don't know where you want to start because there were so many, the latest being Apple, blockbuster numbers. Give me the pick, the best and the worst, please.
I think they're all good, and I mean it. You can nitpick. You know, we can go through line by line and decide which is not going to make it. Is this the end of Microsoft because they're under a bit of pressure and they're not going to make their returns on investment? They're over-investing and so on. But Lindsay, and I'm, you know, I always tell you I'm an accountant, and I like to look at the actual income statement and balance sheet. Yes. I'm not influenced by what people say around. I go say, what are the sales? You know, what are the costs and so on? And then I go to the bottom line and I see how much cash they're putting on the bank, in the bank. And yes, analysts will start to look at it and look at what's likely to happen in the future from these results, discount them and get to a so-called intrinsic value. But in terms of their size and riches, these are enormous businesses doing incredibly well. What knocked me out was with
Meta.
You know, when you look at Meta's role, Meta's numbers, which were absolutely outstanding, and you know, just identifying where things are, you know, where things are going, where they taking that company. And, you know, the kind of spending that they're making. They're forward looking. He's an energetic person. So I haven't got all the full details in front of me, you know, and I can't really quote the numbers offhand because these are big numbers. But, look at Apple, up 23%, sales. And I'd mentioned, I don't know if Viv recalls or you recall when I came back from, New York in October.
The story about buying a phone for your daughter or daughter-in-law.
And I told you for a friend here.
Oh, a friend.
And I was saying that, yeah, and I said, I couldn't get with, you know, there were just hundreds of people in the, Apple stores, you know, just buying the 17. And I said, don't write this off, you know, which has come through in the sales, both in China and India and in the United States. But if you look at Microsoft and their Azure, people getting worried, upset. Why? Because the growth in Azure went, which is their cloud business, grew 39% and not 40% as last year. Last year, I said, hold on a sec. You know, they grew 39%. What do you want out of a company? So,
yeah.
I mean, without getting too emotional, I just think, hold on a sec. Take a step back. Stop trying to analyze every little bit. You know, just look at the big picture and where this is all going. It's not going to be perfect. You know, it's not going to be in a straight line. There are going to be hiccups. But overall, I mean, these businesses are just spewing out cash. So I'm not put off by anything that I'm seeing at the moment.
Okay. Viv, are you put off by anything, either from the Magnificent Seven or from the AI, not pretenders, but pretenders to their crown of the name Magnificent? You saw a lot of numbers. And I also want you to focus, if you would, on the companies that are committing more and more to CapEx. CapEx, very, very important, not just the numbers. Over to you, Viv.
So basically SanDisk, that company is up dramatically this year. I think up 90%. And after, in aftermarket trade last night, it is up even higher. And this thing is up to doing almost 1,000% or 1,000+% last year. Remember the stock delisted a few years ago, relisted basically about a year or so ago. It's up over 1,000-something% last year and about another, I said, 90%+ this year. So I think combined it probably is up like, you know, I don't even want to know the number at the moment. But the interesting one that I saw there was Tesla's results. Mm-hmm. Tesla basically is the world's largest car company. And what are they doing? They're moving away from cars. They are moving their factories towards robotics. Okay. And that is either two things. Firstly, it's either, if you're taking a cynical view, Musk is seeing that the demand for Teslas is down for, you know, political and other reasons. And therefore, he wants to give another story out there. And so he says, we're not going to build enough Teslas because, you know, obviously we can't sell them, but rather just make these robots. And that's going to give us another few years of hype and whatever. Or it's a case of he's seeing that robots are close to fulfilled. And that means that you want to be the guy out there with the ability to make these robots in a quantity quickly, which will give you a head start into the new race. And the reason I might believe two instead of one, in that he's actually acting rationally, is that there's a new video from Figure. And Figure is one of those guys that make robots. You know, they're more into the design stuff than the actual manufacturing. But it's a robot basically emptying a dishwasher. And normally when you find these things doing these things, they have these kind of either the slow kind of, you know, how you talk about this hyper choreographed kind of like way of doing it, or it's teleoperated, which means that some human being is controlling it. And the CEO of Figure says, no, this is entirely autonomous. Okay. You can watch it for yourself. It's the Figure robot emptying a dishwasher. It looks very, very smooth, very, very quick. It looks as like a slow human, that's true, but a slow human that I'd be happy to have working in my kitchen, you know what I mean? And so that's one thing to look at. The second thing, I don't know if it's the right point to talk about this or not, but have you guys heard about a thing called ClaudeBot?
No.
Okay. So this is something that's new. It's spelled C-L-A-W-E-D, Claude, like a claw.
Yeah.
But obviously it's a play on the word Claude, like, you know, from Anthropic. I think they renamed it BaltBot recently. But anyway, it's if you look at that there, it's a new kind of thing that runs off these famously Apple Minis, but you can run it off any kind of like CPU and stuff. What it does, it accesses all your stuff, like your WhatsApp, your Telegram, your email, and all that kind of stuff. And it uses that when you want to basically work on stuff. Okay. Also, we have seen Anthropic has come out with an AI for Excel. An Excel AI. Can you imagine, David, how properly integrated Excel AI would be in your life? Okay.
Yeah.
That's the kind of new stuff coming out at the moment. And the interesting thing about this that I want to point out, and that's a little different, is that they've looked at the usage of the ClaudeBot stuff, and people are using the higher-end subscriptions for AI and not just playing around with the free and the low-end subscriptions. Because think of what that means. Mm. It means that it's so useful that people are deciding that they want to spend the $200 a month, not the $20 a month, or get the free version in order to get advantage of this thing. So I think it's a key moment in the whole AI race that, you know, I haven't analyzed how that's going to affect things going forward, but it's interesting that you are seeing that even this far into the race, we have a change that is this dramatic happening that maybe the market's not seeing right now at the moment.
David, before you make your point, I have to ask you, would you have a robot in your flat in Corlett Drive overlooking the Wanderers cricket stadium? Instead of you or your wife emptying the dishwasher, would you have this thing coming out of a cupboard and emptying it for you? Would you feel comfortable with that?
Yeah, I hate the dishwasher. I hate washing the dishwasher. I'm good with a vacuum cleaner, but there's certain things that I detest, and that one is putting in and taking out of the dishwasher. Now, why? I don't know. But so I've got Linda, who's my robot at the moment. But
Linda, I know you're listening. I like you.
And the areas here, you cannot believe how much dust accumulates and things like that. So I'm
it's
all
not the question of what you like and don't like. I'm asking you, would you be happy with a robot as described by Viv Govender? Would you be happy with that robot in your house?
Yes. I've got no problems with that. They have an intruder or whatever it is. It depends on how what it starts to look like, because I think it's progress. You know what the point, just listen to what Viv's saying.
Yes.
And it's so important, because we criticize the investment and the amount of money going in, and I'm always critical of that, of people who, that's how growth is created. You know what you're doing? You're helping scientists. Yes, they might flop here, flop there, but all of this adds up. And if we don't make the investment, you never progress. And come back to South Africa. There's no investment here. There is no investment. There's no investment in anything, in infrastructure. How can a country grow? So I don't mind if these businesses keep putting in money, and sometimes it's a bit of a flop and they don't get the exact return on it. It would have paid to put it into a 7-day account or a 30-day account rather than putting it into science. And, from my point of view, I'm so big on R&D and the eventual benefits that will bring. And you just have to go back to Amazon and the early days, how we used to lambaste poor old Jeff Bezos because he constantly reinvested. Yes, he might not have had the best returns, whatever it is you can criticize down the road, but just look, what he has produced and where these companies are going. So, I just shake my head, when Meta, Zuckerberg has wasted money, he's gone into certain things, but overall something will come out of it. He cuts it when it's not going, as he's doing at the moment, but he will find something else. He's taking the, credit to him and to Musk. The same thing going into robots. So, Lindsay, this is, I find it exciting.
No, you make a very good point, David. You make a very good point. I mean, you can spend an awful lot of money. I mean, if you look at, for example, Kurs Becker, he went into China once and it was a complete flop. And then he went in there again and it was a huge success. And we know what the story is from there. So you just keep on going. And as you say, there will be some flops. There will be hundreds of millions, if not billions, wasted. But the billions that are not wasted turn into eventually trillions, potentially. Yes. So, yes, you do make a very good point indeed. Do you agree with David, Viv?
Well, you most certainly. We always talk about AI, and I think it would be wrong not to mention. I don't know if you guys saw this week that some scientist in Spain has a theoretical cure for pancreatic cancer. It's been incredibly successful in mice, and this is just the kind of stuff. I mean, R&D is not just about making your product better or whatever. It's about making the world better. You spend on R&D, the knock-on effects are so large and so grand, you don't even know what the eventual outcome is going to be like. And I think that, in South Africa, the fact that we're not spending, despite the fact that we obviously have there's something weird about South Africa. I don't know what it is exactly. But if you look at the how much above our weight we punch, it's quite surprising. You know what I mean? Especially in technology, where we've had the heart transplant or whatever. Where's the schooling system? Where is the weather? Where is the biltong? Who knows? But there's something about us that does make a difference in how things how we think about the world. I think it's also the fact that we live in a very diverse country, that you can't just be a single-minded drone and do your job. You have to think outside the box sometimes, and I think that's important. And so I think that we in South Africa significantly underinvest in R&D, and we are wasting, I think, one of our key assets. And I don't know if you saw the matric results that came out recently.
No.
And everyone's talking about 80% in KZN or whatever, not mentioning the fact that, I think 40% of the kids that basically start grade one end up getting a qualification in grade 12. So the other kids are kicked out in grade 10 and 11 so that the idiot bureaucrats can say that they had an 80% pass rate. Well, that only means 80% of those that wrote passed. Meanwhile, only less than half of those that actually started in the school actually wrote the exam. You know what I mean? And that is the thing that I think we're wasting all this talent. That is quite a tragedy.
Lindsay, I must tell you something. You think Viv is clever? Okay, I was looking at Crawford's results. There are so many Naidus, governors, and so on there. He's going to have a lot of competition down the line. 8, 9, 11 distinctions.
Yeah, what is it about the children in China and children in India, Viv, that makes them more diligent than people for example, the UK? And let me give you an example. I've got a friend who's a teacher. She's one of these teachers that is on a list. So when someone gets sick or someone goes on holiday or extended leave, whatever it is, she gets called in to go to the school. She says she's teaching year eight, as it is in England, year eight pupils, and she's teaching them history. And she said, what is the predominant religion in Southern Ireland? And the kid put his hand up and said, Scottish. So the child didn't know what religion was, didn't know the difference between religion and language, obviously knew absolutely nothing. And this is year eight. So there's a huge difference between, for example, European kids, American kids, and I don't want to be stereotypical here, but Indian or subcontinent children and Chinese children. They want to learn, Viv. They want to work 7 days a week, don't they?
Not that. I think it's also, you ever wonder why Jewish kids do so well? And why, you know, you find it's because I think
it's tell you that afterwards.
I think it's the actual reverence that Jews and Indians give to teachers and to education. Mm. You know what I mean? Like I mean, if you look at the Jewish tradition, it's the guy that studies, the holy books the best, has a lot of automatic respect. I don't know if I'm correct about this, David, but it seems to be like that. Yeah. So if you're a learned person, even if it's a poor person, if you're a learned person, you admire it. In the Indian culture as well, I mean, there's a saying. It goes basically, it's teacher before God. You know what I mean? Your teacher is like is treated with a deep degree of respect that's insane. Now, in a way that's good, because it obviously gets you the good marks. In a way that's bad, because the one thing I always point out to the world is that we always talk about the dumb Americans, right? But there's something about that craziness in America that misbehaving or disobedience or this plain old, like, you know, stupid stubbornness. That allows a child to think outside the box and do the things that they do. You know what I mean? And I think that's one thing in Africa as well. We complain about the fact that our kids don't, you know, get the marks or whatever. But I think that you can't really push just on education as much as you do. Because yes, you'll get the best marks, but you won't get the best kid, if you know what I mean? And so I do wonder, like, you know, you need to have some of that. You need to have a mix of it. Obviously, the kid needs to study at school, but you need to also have that certain degree of, you know, the crazy kid. Yeah, the chutzpah. Like, I was just thinking to someone, especially with young boys nowadays, people put them on Ritalin, they put them on all this kind of garbage because they don't want the kid to be too high energy in class. Yeah. But you look at, I mean, we've all been like in the real world. Who are the people that really make the biggest difference? It's these crazy high energy guys, you know what I mean? Mm. You'll find some guy that was a terrible student and he owns like 100 pizza shops. Like, I know one of our clients is like that. He owns like a bunch of pizza shops, and he's like, you know, he's like one of the richest guys around. But it's because of the fact that you have a situation in which, you know, you have that energy. That energy matters more than anything else. So, yeah, look, I do buy education, but I do think that, you know, the energy, the misbehaving is something that we must in this country as well.
David Shapiro was probably a little bit of a cheeky chap when he was in class, but he's got some stories about Jewish children. I know you're dying to tell us this story, David.
You know what's very – well, first of all, Jewish mothers you don't start with, okay? You know, and if they – they push their kids, you know, it's like the tiger moms. But there's another very interesting point is that – studying the Torah, in other words, the holy books, if you study that, you don't, the rabbi is nothing more than a guide or a teacher. People study it in groups and they learn to debate. And the whole thing is around debating points that come up. In other words, you're not told what to do. You know, you're not told. You have to interpret it according to commentary and that. And you go into any yeshiva, you know, or a holy school, whatever you want to call it, you'll find people sitting there in groups debating what happens. And that, if you take that through, it's a very, very good way of learning. In other words, it's not by rote. It's not forced upon you. So it's something that they've tried to emulate or copy in schools. I don't know with how much success, but it's a wonderful play time or way of of studying things.
So it's not the fact that they're studying one particular thing, i.e. the Torah. In fact, it can be applied to the rest of their the rest of their learnings, and indeed in later life, the ability to debate, the ability to understand someone else's idea. And exactly. If you're in a group, you question each other's ideas, and therefore you have a greater outlook on life, I would say. Yes, okay. Is that what you're saying? It's a different education system. When I went to school, there were 30 to 40 kids in a class, and everyone learnt the same thing. It was reading, writing, arithmetic, and that was it. And you learnt the times table, and you learnt English literature and English language, etc. And it was all set. There was no individuality. We all had to learn the same thing. Whereas today, I think you have to say, little David, little Viv, little Lindsay, they're very, very different. They have different outlooks, and they have different skills. So let's put them in this class or this group rather than just all in the same class. Has to be individualized, I think, David, as an educator. Yeah. Crawford is an example of that. Maybe they're progressive.
Very much so. But I was knocked out by they've just come out. I think they write a different exam, and the results came out this morning. Was in Business Day, and I looked along the line there, and I said, "Viv, you're in trouble, boy. you're going to have a lot of youngsters there that are going to come and challenge you, and so on." But it's marvelous to see. I mean that you've got this level of students. You know that these people are coming out with these incredible results. And we've got the schools that can produce it. Also, credit to them.
So I sort of point something out here. What David is talking about, what these kids are studying actually by look at the holy books, they're studying philosophy. You know what I mean? That's what they're actually debating. It always amazed me that if you look at any part in human history until we had, you know, formal schooling like we have right now, that you would never be considered to be an educated person if you didn't know about philosophy. All through thousands of years of human history, if you were to be an educated person, you had to know philosophy. How is it that we don't have a philosophy class in school? How crazy is that? That the one thing that has always been thought to be makes an educated person is philosophy, the ability to think. And yet no school has like as much focus on philosophy as they do on English, science, math, you know, etc. It's such a weird kind of dichotomy, isn't it?
It really is, and if you can be bothered and you're on X or whatever it is, get into a site called Philosophy Quotes, and it sends you something per week, 5 quotes per week from modern and historical philosophers. And I find it actually very illuminating. And you read something that was written, Viv, 300 BC or something, and you say, I can apply this to US politics at the moment. It is incredible. I agree with you. Philosophical quotes to me are, or philosophical studies are terribly interesting. There's a BBC program that goes on at a ridiculous time, like 1 o'clock in the morning, about philosophers, and it's from the 1970s, and it's really boring, but goodness me, it's insightful. Anyway, we're going off at a tangent, and this is why the show is supposed so popular. And
you've got to go on to the Monty Python. You know, of the philosopher's soccer game and football game.
Now, that is a proper tangent. David and Viv, we've got to talk about now the results that came out this week, because one of the main reasons I get you two in is because of your tech and your AI success and knowledge. Is it a case that we are now getting different companies doing different things and therefore yielding different results for investors? Is there a difference between Apple and Meta and Tesla and Nvidia, for example? And you have to be selective now. You can't just buy. This is a theme that I always bring up in every asset class, but I'm going to bring it up now, given the fact that we've had all these results this week. And I'll start with you, Viv, on this one. Do you have to be selective with the Viv Govender Rand Swiss portfolio?
Look, I mean, you'd do better if you were selective. I mean, if you had gotten Sandisk and stuff, Micron, like I did, you'd have done much better. But Micron alone also did 200%+ last year. So, yeah, if you buy into the overall sector and don't, you know, just, you know, I'd be pretty, like, you know, even about it. I mean, David mentioned, I think last week was that ETF SOX, right?
Yes.
SOX ETF has done 100% in the last 2 years. You know what I mean? It is up quite significantly this year alone as well. So I do think you can still, because the underlying trend is so strong, you will get, you know, some benefit from that. But obviously you'll do better picking the winners. And yes, you're right. We might be coming to a point right now where the actual real winners are going to be emerging. So we're going to know who is the Amazons or who is the Price.coms of this internet, of this particular phase of the market. But that being said, like I said, SanDisk, look at SanDisk's performance. Look at the other memory company's performance have been insane. And with regards to Microsoft, I still have belief in Microsoft because Microsoft has the same benefit that Google has or Alphabet has. I would suspect that if you had to look at the combined IQ of these two organizations, there's no organization in the world that can come close to either Microsoft or Google in terms of the pure amount of brains that they've accumulated over the last couple of decades. There's so many geniuses just sitting, collecting a salary at Microsoft and at Google. And if they get under threat and they have the desire to actually go and focus on it, there's no way Anthropic can build a better AI bot for Excel than Microsoft can. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's no way you can have some, small company building a better, AI system that's going to communicate with your Gmail than Google can. And I think that these big companies still have an advantage that has not been replaced yet. The one thing I'd be nervous about is some of the smaller guys out there. Like I'm hearing very bad news about OpenAI because apparently they are not quite catching up with the next thing here, and they are so dependent on the hype. Whereas Google and Microsoft can actually go out and get funding from their own internal sources. OpenAI has to go and raise funds each time. And if they ever have a period in which they are not considered to be the best thing around, they're going to have trouble raising the money. So I think some of these smaller guys might have problems. But I still think if you're just going to be basically saying buy one or two stocks, buying an Alphabet is not a bad idea at the moment.
Okay, David, over to you. Have you chosen one out of the companies that release results this week and say, I want this one and I don't want this one?
You know, I must tell you, I was impressed by Apple, and I'm not haven't been a big Apple holder. And, when you see that their sales were up 23%, also services. Look, they're slowing down on services was up very strongly as well. And I just think that for me, it just showed that there's a breakthrough or a turnaround in taste. The fact that they did well in India, the well in China as well, because there's been criticism about that. Yes, underlying goods are costing a bit more in order to put them all together. But when I watch my kids, when I watch the people around me, and this is what's so interesting, I like to have a big screen in front of me. That's it. I like to operate like I'm at Houston Space Center. And but when I look at young, do you know what I mean? When I look at younger people, everything is on their phone, everything. And their whole life is dictated. It's almost a link. They cannot survive with it. And so I was impressed with that. I've got to go through it. I'm sure the shares will be down now because for some other reason. But the way I'm approaching it is almost, looking at the backbone, which is ASML, NVIDIA, Taiwan, Semiconductor, Micron, those kind of companies. So I still believe in the backbone. And then, the platforms that are monetizing all of this, cloud, advertising, whatever, which is Alphabet, Amazon, Microsoft, Meta. The one that's eluding me, and this might kill me, is the software houses. They've been under huge pressure, ServiceNow, Adobe, Salesforce, and so on. And I can't believe that you can actually adopt these and put them into your business, because very few companies have really adopted AI. I mean, I'm talking across a broad spectrum. And you're going to need expertise. And, I believe that there's going to be opening for these, but they haven't done anything up to now. But, I mean, you can go down the chain. And also, if you listen to the power side of it, there are massive gaps there as well. So if I'm going in and constructing a portfolio, it's across all these segments. And the one thing that, with SanDisk, which is what Viv has been talking about, I mean, no one took this into consideration that you're going to need memory, which is the Micron side, the Samsung side, and certainly SanDisk. SanDisk was, you'd go to a shop and you'd put the little disk into your camera and you'd store your pictures on that. They're much bigger than that. But I like to go across the chain. I say, if I got to put it together, I want the whole supply chain.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. I'll leave you on this now because Viv was talking about philosophy and the teaching of philosophy in schools, or rather the lack thereof. Okay, I'll give you from philosophers' quotes, which I get every week. The first quote was as follows: neither a lofty degree of intelligence nor imagination nor both together go to the making of genius. Love, 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 that is the soul of genius. And that came from Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, 1756 to 1791, whose birthday it was earlier this week. And the quote that I'll leave you with, I think this is all aimed at Trump, actually, and the Trump administration. Men, be kind to your fellow men. This is your first duty. Kind to every age and station, kind to all that is not foreign to humanity. What wisdom can you find that is greater than kindness? And that was Jean-Jacques Rousseau, 1712 to 1778, in his book Emile, or On Education. There you are, gentlemen. We've been talking about money and this and that, and I will end on money, actually, because that's my duty. This looks a little bit like 1987, a sort of mini version. It started on the Wednesday and Thursday in 1987, October the 19th, and I think we're getting something like it now, with the gold price down 5.6%, the silver price down nearly 14%, the other stocks getting whacked a bit. I won't ask you to comment on that, but it's got a feeling about it. Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss, the award-winning Rand Swiss, and David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities. And don't forget to go to the Sasfin Securities website to enter the Crystal Challenge, because I'm going to be doing that, and I'll beat you all. Thank you, gentlemen. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.